I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Shawnee Fox, a naturopathic physician, helps cancer survivors create lives of wellness, authenticity, and joy. Her leading edge, back in charge, medical care model picks up where conventional cancer treatment ends, helping survivors restore vitality of body and spirit, prevent recurrence, and reclaiming the healthy, happy future they so richly deserve. Dr. Shawnee's empowering messages about your innate power to generate wellness and happiness have made her a popular national speaker, radio guest, and guest blogger for cancer survivors and wellness communities, including W4CS.com, Cancer Survivor Radio, The Frankie Boyle Show, Five to Thrive, and NOU, the magazine of Women Survivor Alliance. She is the author of The Cancer Survivor's Fear First Aid Kit, Five Simple Steps to Release Your Fear of Cancer Recurrence, available at cancerfearfirstaid.com, and has been published in the peer-review Natural Medicine Journal. Dr. Shawnee serves survivors across the nation through live and innovative virtual programs. Dr. Shawnee's free assessment, How Cancer Proof Are You?, helps pinpoint ways you can stay cancer-free so you can relax into deep wellness and peace of mind. Take your free assessment copy today at wellaftercancer.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Shawnee, and I look forward to hearing about your work and how you serve cancer survivors. Now first, you have chosen to serve cancer survivors. Why did you choose to serve this particular population?
Cancer survivors are a very underserved population within the conventional medical system. As you may know, there's lots and lots of them, I believe 14 million as of early this year, a population that's rapidly growing. And while there's been a lot of emphasis on improving cancer treatment, there has been very, very little attention to what happens when cancer treatment is over. With my training as a naturopathic physician, I recognized that I had a very, very good toolbox, if you will. The therapies of naturopathic medicine are very appropriate to this cancer survivorship stage, where this is not a matter of medicine anymore, typically, or very, you know, that's a limited part of what goes on. We need to make the whole person well. And so my training was appropriate. It's an area that I had a passion for, and there was a real, real need out there.
Great. Good. Then, Dr. Fox, what are some of the most prevalent health issues among this population?
I divide those issues into three stages. Number one is that once cancer treatment is over, very little attention is paid to what it takes to recover from cancer treatment. Cancer treatments often are very aggressive, take a very high toll on us in terms of physical wellness, not to mention emotional wellness. And we don't give credit, I think, to the amount of time it takes to recover from that and simply get one's vital energy back. And so the first stage is just helping people recover their energy, their stamina, and to reduce any residual symptoms that are lingering after cancer treatment. That's stage one of cancer survivor care. Number two is there's prevention. Probably foremost in any cancer survivor's mind is the idea that this cancer could come back. And that can be a very distressing thought. And so typically they're very open to wanting to know, what can we do? What can a person do to keep this from coming back? And so we don't know everything about cancer prevention, but we do know a lot. These days we do know quite a lot in terms of both the lifestyle and then individualized risk management measures that can be taken to help each individual who's been through treatment at least reduce their chances to the minimum of having another bout of cancer. So there's prevention. it's a big concern with cancer survivors, and that's certainly a big topic in cancer survivorship medicine. And then the third phase that I recognize as a very significant phase of wellness after cancer is dealing with cancer's emotional impact. It's a life-changing event. It pulls the floor out from under you, typically. That's the way I've often heard it described, upon diagnosis. And then you go through treatment, and you're so busy just getting to your appointments and getting through that part that often it doesn't hit fully until the treatment is over. And then people are left in varying states of emotional wellness. But very often there are just the shock, the initial shock of the diagnosis still hasn't been processed. And certainly, having been through this experience, people are often asking questions, who am I now? I'm not the person I was before. It often has effects on finances, family relationships, all kinds of other areas which have an emotional impact. And so these things add up to where handling the emotional impact and processing that and coming out stronger is, in my mind, a phase of the cancer survivorship world that's also very little attended to, at least in a cohesive way, within the conventional system. And this is why I've actually created a three-stage model to restore energy, to prevent future recurrences, and then to synthesize and integrate and build on the emotional impact into greater happiness after cancer. That's the way I work with my patients.
And are you going to talk more about this later?
If you wish.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to hear about the model. It sounds interesting.
The model starts with it has three phases, and they're not necessarily linear phases. In other words, it's not number one, then number two, then number three. They overlap, and so what's important to do is when any cancer survivor comes in to see me, I assess and see where they're at in terms of each of these three phases, and then begin treatment accordingly. So, for example, a person may be interested in prevention, but if they also have significant stressors going on with their emotional impact, like issues like, you know, I don't have enough child care, I don't have the finances to afford it, they need support in just social support or emotional support, chances are they're not going to get anywhere with prevention until some of these everyday issues are dealt with. And so we make sure that the support is in place, that the person has ways to cope with what stressors come along, and then we can sit down and talk about prevention, for example. Another example, if a person is their functionality, their physical functionality is badly impacted by neuropathy or chemo brain or some of the famous residual symptoms of cancer treatment. Again, it's hard to talk about prevention when a person is having trouble functioning day to day. So we just find where the most acute needs are. We start there, whichever phase that happens to be, and then we work until we've covered aspects of all three pieces of the model. You know, some people are physically well when they come in, but they're interested in prevention. Then we can go straight to prevention. So it's very individualized, but I find that when these three aspects are addressed, then a person has a real, full, holistic basis for wellness.
And do you usually address these, or do you incorporate other community resources? I was thinking of the public health nurse who goes out and visits many families in the community anyhow. Do you utilize their services or services of other people in the community, or do you try to do this?
Well, as a primary care physician, I see myself as being the person who can be the best coordinator of all this. Having said that, doesn't mean I provide all the services myself. Certainly where there is greater expertise, so for example, a public health nurse has aspects of expertise in terms of fulfilling social needs and whatever they would pick up on a home visit, that's going to be, she's going to do that much better, he or she is going to do that much better than I will. So I would certainly incorporate the services of a public health nurse. In that case, a social worker could be helpful. A physical therapist, of course, could be very helpful in certain physical need cases. So yes, I think it ultimately takes a village, but I take my role as primary care. I think this is really the meaning of primary care physician. We are supposed to be the person who gathers the resources. We don't provide all the resources, but we gather them and then provide within our expertise and coordinate with the others such that the whole picture is addressed.
Great. Good. I like that. Now, you have an area of expertise and interest in survivors who have fear of cancer recurrence. And can you tell us how you got interested in this?
Certainly. I think my interest was prompted by the fact that this is such a prevalent issue. And it's frequently not detected or talked about within the conventional medical visits, the follow-up visits that survivors usually have. There's actually research now. In 2013, there was a review of studies. And the review, after having qualified the studies for the review, found that at minimum, a third of cancer survivors, and maybe as many as 96%, depending on the study, were plagued by persistent fear of cancer recurrence. So at least a third, and possibly many more than that. So this is a very, very prevalent need. And frankly, I saw it coming into my office all the time. If I would inquire about a survivor's well-being, this would be among the issues. This is so frequently among the issues that will come up. I'm just so scared. And, of course, it's well known that a person might be fine a lot of the time, but the classic trigger is if they have a follow-up appointment coming up. They have a scan appointment, for example, where they're going to check for evidence of a recurrence. And those can be very triggering events such that, let's say, a week, 2 weeks before that event, the person can be very, very fearful, even though most of the time before that they were okay. So maybe episodic. But in any case, it's very prevalent and something that people were really, really asking for help for. How can I be less afraid? I'd like to be less afraid.
You know, it's interesting because I talk with a lot of cancer patients, and I find a majority of them have this fear of recurrence. And I think back of when I had cancer 40 years ago, I don't remember ever having that fear because I just knew it was not going to come back. I didn't even think about it coming back.
You know? There are some individuals like you, Carl. I have met individuals like you who simply make a very firm decision that my life is not about cancer. And, of course, it's followed through with action. I'm sure you did many things to assure yourself that you'd have to be in the best wellness. Yes, a firm decision followed by that much follow-through often does result exactly in that in what you've seen. It's 40 years without cancer, and I certainly congratulate you on that. And so sometimes it's a matter of helping people. Well, first of all, if they have not got a program in place that's going to support their, you know, really robustly support their fundamental wellness, then they're going to be more afraid. So one of part of our prevention program is not just about the physical effects of that, that's important, but it's also about the empowerment that comes with it. So that's part of the reason we do solid prevention programs, is because people do feel less afraid when we do that. And yes, then there needs to be a belief, a solid belief, that yes, I will be well. I can believe, I accept that I will be well, and I can focus on that much more than the idea of there's a possibility I might not be.
I think with me, it was partly because I was so busy, I didn't have a lot of time. I was teaching at the university, and I continued through the whole process with my teaching, my research, all of the things that professors do. And I think the other thing was that I had such a strong faith in God. And I think that I see fear of anything as the opposite end of the continuum from faith. And so I think that my faith and my optimism, you know, kind of outweighed any possibility. As I say, I never even thought about there being a recurrence. I figured I've gone through 2 years of this natural treatment, and that's enough is enough, right? I was ready for it to be over, and I never thought again about it coming back, and it never came back. So, but
yes,
but tell us about your approach then with the people that are afraid of the cancer coming back. What do you do with this population?
So I have a short-term approach and a long-term approach. The long-term approach I alluded to before, part of that would be getting a solid prevention plan in place, again, partly for the physiological effects and partly for the empowerment that gives a person. And so that's part of it. And also developing, I am, by the way, both a naturopathic physician and a certified life coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I combine those skills to work on not only the body, but also the emotions and spirit. And so I will use the coaching part of my expertise to shore up a person's belief, a person's trust,
mm-hmm.
that they can be well. That's exactly what you just described, essentially. You,
mm-hmm.
Your anchor was your faith, but it generated in you a trust
mm-hmm.
that everything would be well, a belief.
Mm-hmm.
So however we can get there with the person, I will also work to expand their belief. That, of course, that's long-term work. That takes quite, you know, a lot of,
mm-hmm.
we build a big relationship and we work within that until a person comes to that understanding for themselves. And it's wonderful work. I love doing that with people.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, people often need what I call a Band-Aid approach at first. In other words, they are having attacks of fear. I've even seen this look like panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need something in the moment. What can I do? Please just, you know, something right now. What do I do? And for that situation, to start them off, I've developed something I call a first aid kit for fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We start with that.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to tell us then about the first aid kit?
Certainly. The first aid kit is based on mindfulness. Mindfulness, of course, is the ability to focus fully, intently on the present moment and have all your attention in the present moment. And various versions of mindfulness have been researched and are associated with much better outcomes in terms of even survival and certainly quality of life for cancer survivors and also people who have had other kinds of chronic disease. So it's a very powerful tool if one is able to summon it. So the first aid kit has a person come back to the present moment, and I have them do this first by taking some intentional breaths, some deep breathing. Breathing, of course, is a very present moment activity, and it as we're paying attention to our breath, we are brought right back to the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll continue that with having a person observe the input of their senses, which is very simple. For example, if you're sitting in a chair, just notice what your back feels like against the chair, what your legs feel like against the chair, your feet feel like on the floor. The purpose of that being, again, to draw the attention fully into the present moment. And the reason this is so effective is because, if we think about it, fear is a concern about future events. There's no evidence of what you're thinking about, in this case, in the present moment. It's just our mind leaping ahead to the future and deciding to be anxious about that. By focusing on the present moment, we can displace fear because we cannot, in our mind, think about the future and the present at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness, concrete mindfulness by noticing the breath, noticing the senses, this is a way of just reeling the mind back into the present moment where the fear doesn't exist because it's a creature of the future, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how we start.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a further step to it, that once we've made some observations about where we are in the present moment, input of senses, what can I see or hear or touch in this moment, I have people add gratitude to that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how wonderful. My eyes are working. My ears are working.
Mm-hmm.
My senses are intact. And they can be grateful about anything they choose, but it can flow right out of the prior part of the exercise. Just noticing what is working in their body and being grateful for it. And again, that displaces fear in a different way, because fear, you know, you mentioned before that once your faith was firmly established,
mm-hmm.
fear basically could not get in edgewise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You had established your focus on a high order of emotional state, which
mm-hmm.
is trust and faith. Fear, of course, of a different part of the emotional spectrum. So we can't be both grateful and fearful at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like light and dark. You know, if you turn on the light, the dark goes away.
Right.
You can't have both. So it's the same thing with gratitude and fear. And if you're able to summon gratitude, the fear cannot also be in that moment. It has to wait till some other time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those steps of being mindful of the breath, the senses, and then noticing what's working and being grateful for it, that is actually within moments, really, a person can do that and bring themselves to a place where fear is sidelined and with the present moment and the gratitude for the present moment exist.
Mm-hmm. One thing I found with me also, because 40 years ago, everyone thought that the doctor had all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going against medical advice because they told me that I had 6 months with chemo and surgery. And I decided to go against that and not take chemo and surgery and use a natural approach. And my family would say, well, why don't you do what the doctor wants you to do, but then you can also do this. My colleagues, who were all nurses, would either not talk to me about it or would reinforce, do what the doctor wants you to do, because that was their orientation. And this tends to put doubt in your mind. And so one thing that I found that was very important was a support system. And I had a very good friend who told me she was available day or night. I could call at any time. Now, I never did call at night because I didn't need it. But just knowing that that was available was a support also through this whole process. And I think that there, in the crisis research, there is support is one of the things that is helpful through a crisis. You know, your belief system, the support system that you have, and there was one other thing, I can't remember what the third one was, but support was very important to me, and then I did, you know, I did do the meditation, and I did affirmations and visualization, and many of the alternative things that people tend to do one or another of at this point, so I think they all helped.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and certainly in your case, the results speak for themselves. Your point about social support is very well taken. Certainly, there is also lots of evidence, lots of research indicating that social support, people with social support do much better than those who don't have that. And even further, it's interesting, it's not just the availability of support, but it's also that personal touch. The person feels supported. And so it's one thing to say, well, at our center we have, you know, X, Y, and Z by way of social support. That's a good thing, of course. But that is not the same as a person reaching out and saying, I'm here for you day and night. Anytime you need to call, please do that. And you having that belief in that, that knowing that that's there. So you apparently had a very the most powerful form of social support available to you. Yes, that's wonderful that you had that, and it's very important to everyone's well-being.
Right. Before we look then a little bit more at how people can find out more about your kit, I came across something in your material that I wanted to ask you about because it sounded so interesting to me. And that was, it said you do an assessment on how cancer-proof people are. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Again, we know so much more about cancer prevention now than we used to. And so what I did is I pulled together in an online assessment. It's a, you know, very simple assessment that you just rate yourself on various statements that are in the assessment. And each one of those statements is a facet of cancer prevention that's supported by research. So there's one section on physical factors. For example, I eat a nutrient-rich diet, free of antibiotics and pesticides, that sort of thing. There's a section on physical wellness and sleep and that sort of thing. There's also a section on how well do you know your personal risk factors. And then there are lots of statements having to do with emotional wellness, a sense of fulfillment, and how healthy are you in the relationship sphere. That's the social support we were just talking about. And so a person gets to rate themselves, but more importantly, they get a picture of, oh, there's lots and lots of aspects to making my body resistant to cancer or other disease. Because these, you know, once you're resistant to cancer, you're also typically resistant to chronic disease as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that the idea is that it expands a person's view. If all they've been told is, once you finish cancer treatment, take, for example, tamoxifen for breast cancer survivors, or you know, a pill of some sort. Again, I don't say we shouldn't do that,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much more, because tamoxifen only affects one pathway in our bodies, whereas a wellness program can affect body and spirit in a very holistic way. We have lots of ways to empower ourselves to become resilient to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the purpose of the assessment is to raise awareness of all the different ways that a person can contribute to their own cancer prevention program, or said in another way, the way I prefer to say it really, is to their future radiant wellness,
mm-hmm.
among other things, you know, no cancer in my future. And so that's why I made that assessment available. It is free online.
Great, good. That's a good thing to have out there. And I will put your interview on my Cancer Foundation site. And so I'm sure that people that are interested in preventing it, so forth, will be interested in looking this up and you know, doing it to see where they are in terms of their cancer proof. So if you then would tell us where people can locate your kit and where they can find this assessment and more information about you?
Certainly. The online assessment is at www.wellaftercancer.com. Wellaftercancer.com. That will take you straight to the online assessment, how mm-hmm. cancer-proof are you. And the Cancer Fear First Aid Kit is... You can find out more about that at www.cancerfearfirstaid.com.
Mm-hmm.
Cancerfearfirstaid.com.
Now, do you see clients?
I do. I'm located in Portland, Oregon, so I have a local clientele of survivors who come in for medical visits,
mm-hmm.
and in terms of emotional support, coaching support, I have clients all over the country.
Good.
I work by phone, and mm-hmm. yes, and that's a lovely thing, and, you know, between technology and just our plain phone lines, to be mm-hmm. able to reach people wherever they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. I didn't mean, do you, because I knew you did, but what I was trying to ask was, can people nationally reach you for consultation? And you did answer that question, and so they...
Yes.
We'll find this information on your website?
Or? Yes, my general website is drshanifox.com, drshanifox.com, or they can simply call my office, 866-678-8577.
Great, good. Now, do you have any parting words for cancer survivors?
That's a wonderful question. I think if I could tell, you know, say one thing to every cancer survivor out there, it would be that you are more powerful than you know. The wisdom and the strength that got you through that cancer experience are gifts that you can now leverage to create a fabulous survivorship, both physically and in terms of just your peace of mind, your wellness, and your fulfillment. So don't settle for less than what feels good to you. You do not have to live diminished in any way after cancer. Life after cancer can be really quite spectacular, quite even a higher state of wellness than before. And so grab that opportunity, grasp that opportunity. Don't let it go.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. Shani. It's been interesting, and I have not had anyone speak on cancer survivors except... I did interview a friend, Dr. Anne-Marie Evers. Do you know that name? Anne-Marie's done a lot with affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And she recently had cancer and used chemo. And she also used affirmations through the process to reduce the side effects of the chemo.
Beautiful.
And so she has written a book, 70-something or other, 70 Ways to deal with chemo, I think it is, or something like that. And so I interviewed her because I thought that was interesting and important information to have available to people that choose to use chemotherapy.
Certainly. That sounds like a wonderful resource that I'm going to look into myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thank you again. This has been interesting, and I appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
My great pleasure to be here, Carl.
Thank you, Dr. Shawnee.
Bye-bye.
Bye. My second guest, Brett Larkin, teaches yoga and meditation at top San Francisco studios, companies like Google and Pinterest, and on her YouTube channel, where thousands of students have studied with her for over 4 million minutes. Beginners and intermediate yogis can enjoy Brett's online course on personalizing your yoga and finding the style of yoga that's right for you. A lifelong dancer, Brett's classes have been described as serene and strong, and challenging yet placating at the same time. Her online class, Detoxifying Yoga Flow, was named one of the top 5 online yoga workouts of 2013. Yoga teachers can enjoy Brett's few yoga playlists, yoga teacher training tips, and her online yoga business course. More information is available at www.brettlarkin.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Brett, and I look forward to hearing about meditation. You have been involved in meditation, and I must congratulate you that you've had a video on meditation that has been viewed over 100,000 times. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, I got 5,000 people came to a video that I did on my experience with lung cancer, and I was excited I'd gotten 5,000. I can't imagine getting 100,000 people, but what advice do you have for people pursuing meditation? Personally, I'd like to rather it said, what advice do you have for people getting 100,000 people to come to their website?
Yeah. Well, my biggest advice for those pursuing meditation is to really start small. You know, I think people, they get excited about doing meditation, and then meditation becomes a way that they beat themselves up, right? Like, oh, I didn't do it today, or I didn't sit for long enough, or, you know, they use it as a way to sort of self-abuse, and I'm guilty of this, too. So the first thing I'd recommend is just to, like, let that go. You know, I think there are a lot of traditions in yoga that teach, you know, you have to sit down at the same time every day. And I say do that, but if you mess up, you know, don't beat yourself up. That's rule number one, because meditation isn't about getting mad at ourselves. And the second thing I'd really recommend is to focus on learning some specific breathing techniques. This is another thing people sit down and they're like, okay, I'm going to meditate. And then, of course, their mind is wandering. They don't really have anything to anchor them in. And there are a lot of breathing techniques that you can do, and I always do at the beginning of a meditation, to kind of clear your mind or even give the mind a breathing technique to focus on, as opposed to just sitting there kind of wondering, why is my mind not blank? So those would be two things I really recommend, is to, you know, try to have structure, but don't beat yourself up if you mess up. Start with really short sitting times. You know, people are like, I'm going to meditate 20 minutes every day. 20 minutes is a really long time in meditation world, especially if you're new.
Right.
You know, so start with like five minutes. And if you miss a day, you know, that's okay. I think a lot of people also set up schedules that are too strict. You know, I'm supposed to do it every morning. And then if they miss the morning, they are like, okay, well, I'm off schedule, and they kind of get off the bandwagon. It's like, if you miss the morning, just do it before bed. You know, so just to have flexibility and make the practice of developing a meditation practice a way to be kind to yourself from the very beginning. So that would be a big piece of advice, is just be kind to yourself from the beginning and use learning meditation as a way to start cultivating kindness toward yourself. I think that's something we all need to work on. Myself included.
Right. What type of meditation do you advocate?
So the type of meditation I advocate is the type that was taught to me by my teacher is called Ishta Diksha Meditation. And Ishta stands for Integrated Science of Hatha, Tantra, and Ayurveda.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means at its most basic level, you know, because I think it's important not to get caught up in complex concepts. At its most basic level, it means breathing through the Sushumna Nadi, which basically means there's an energy channel from your tailbone to the crown of your head.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it involves accessing that energy channel, which is really just the length of your spine, and meditating after, you know, finding that connection. So it's a style that takes into account the need to meditate, but also then the need to ground in after you've meditated and kind of, you know, take that energy out from kind of the head or maybe the higher chakras and pulling it back down so you can take it with you into your daily life. So, and then, you know, the things I do on YouTube, especially the ones that are popular, is I'll have meditations for certain things, right? So the video that's really popular, or one of the videos that's really popular, I think it's the one you're talking about, is it's called A Meditation to Mend a Broken Heart. So people, when they're going through a breakup, you know, they like that video. So I also have, like, different themes where I try to, again, focus on certain parts of the body where I know chakras or energy channels are, to help with specific things, whether it's stress or anxiety or heartbreak.
Do you advocate preparation? I know when I first started, I was with a group, and some people bathe before, some people use music, some people chant, some people want incense, all kinds of things that people can do before. Do you advocate any of these, or do you just advocate going into the meditation?
The biggest thing I'd advocate is to do some simple movements first. And I have a video coming out soon that's like a preparation for meditation video that's very easy. But just to do some stretches on the floor, really easy yoga poses like child's pose that I talked about before would be a great one before you sit down. Because the hardest part to meditation is that the body's not used to sitting so still. And if we can move around and stretch a little before we come to our meditation seat, we're going to have so much more success. And what's actually really interesting is that yoga as a whole exercise regime was really developed by the sages in order to meditate. Like the only reason they did yoga was to prepare to be able to sit still. So it's like we've got to move in order to be able to sit. So the biggest thing I'd advocate is just stretching and being, you know, just doing some breathing and moving in your body before you make yourself sit still. And then if people have things like candles or incense or some of those other things you mentioned, I think those are such great ideas to just give the space that you're in a sense of being a little more sacred. So like anything you can do to kind of detach from, you know, daily life and sort of shift into a more internal kind of just sacred or whatever words you want to use, but just personal atmosphere. I think those things are really beneficial. So yeah, like sage or scents, candles. I know I use a lot of rocks in my practice or crystals, things like that. So I think those are also just fantastic additions.
You also mentioned earlier about breathing before meditation. Can you give us some ideas of types of breathing that someone could do?
Yeah, so a great one is to do Kapalabhati breath, which is called Shining Skull breath. It's a little hard to describe, but I have it in videos. Another really good one is the Ishta Diksha breath, which again involves moving energy up and down the spine. It's called Hamsa Kriya. So that's another one that's great. And then maybe my favorite is alternate nostril breathing, where you use your hands to block one nostril. And again, I have a whole course about finding the style of yoga that's right for you, and it teaches each of these breathing techniques as separate videos. So alternate nostril breathing is, you know, Kapalabhati is good for some and not for others. I mean, alternate nostril breathing is just something every single person can benefit from. It balances the two sides of the brain, gets you really centered and ready to meditate. So yeah, I'd recommend those.
That's the one that Edgar Cayce recommended in his Search for God material, was the alternate nostril breathing. That was one of them, but that was one that was pretty easy to, you know, describe and pick up and follow. And so we always did that before we meditated in the group. Also, do you advocate something like an affirmation that people focus on when their mind wanders away? Or what do you do about you know, because when you're, especially when you're starting, you're meditating, and then you start thinking about something else and your mind wanders away. What do you use to bring it back?
I use a mantra. I think affirmations are also great and can be powerful in the right circumstance. I think I use them in maybe the broken heart meditation. But as sort of a standard daily practice, I would recommend a mantra. And I think mantras are nice because they're not an English word. You know, it's more of a sound. So you're a little more disconnected from that side of the brain that's, you know, creating words and language. The one I use is mung. You could write it down as M-U-N-G. That was given to me by my teacher, and I'm pretty sure I use it in a meditation that's in that course, and it's been very powerful and helpful for me. There's two or three I think I recommend, and usually you tend to just resonate with one sound, and that's what's so great about this practice is, again, it's all about personalizing it. It's all about making it work for you, you know, not the other way around, or at least that's what I believe. You know, there's so many tools, so it's like take the ones that work for you and personalize those. Rather than we all have to strictly like fit into this cookie cutter thing.
Right. Then, Brett, do you have some parting words before we look at your services, products, and how the listeners can reach you?
No, I mean, I think my biggest message is just that, you know, especially to people who maybe tried yoga in the past and didn't have success with it, or felt like it wasn't for them, you know, to just really get curious about the other styles that are out there and really become your own advocate and almost a detective to find what works for you. Because within the world of yoga, there really is something that can work for everyone. And even once you find something that works, I encourage you to continue to personalize it and really take that role of teacher on, you know, to not... just like give that up to someone else who knows what's best for you, to really become the owner of your own body and really use yoga as just a way to, you know, learn more about how you are in your body and how you breathe in your body, and to just get really curious, because I think that's where all the magic happens.
Great. Well, then, Brett, would you tell us about your services, products, and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. I mean, the best way for listeners to get in touch, and I'm excited if anyone wants to reach out, is a couple ways. So I have a yoga channel on YouTube, which has so many videos, many meditations, and it's all completely free. So you can just go to youtube.com/Brett Larkin Yoga or Google Brett Larkin Yoga, and you'll find the YouTube channel. On my website, which is brettlarkin.com, B-R-E-T-T is my first name, and then Larkin, L-A-R-K-I-N, brettlarkin.com, I have a contact button. So if anyone has additional questions, they can contact me. And I also have the course that I mentioned that I sell, which is, it's called 7 Steps to a Yoga Practice You'll Love Your Whole Life. And what differentiates it from a lot of other yoga courses, which are just like yoga for beginners or whatever, it it starts with the idea of you needing to find the type of yoga that's right for you. So I actually give, in quick, fun, short little videos, overviews of all the different styles of yoga and why you may or may not like them. And then I go over all the different breathing techniques. And then I, you know, give a lot of tips on how you can be your own best teacher and how you can avoid injury. So again, I approach it less as learn this pose, learn that pose. It's more, you know, this group of poses works like this, and, you know, as your own teacher, this is what you should know about them, kind of thing. So the whole course is through that approach, and that course is also available through my website. If they just go to the, I think there's a button on the top, click right now, But yeah, I have a little button that says shop. And if they just go there, they'll be able to find the course.
Great. Good.
So yeah.
And give us the website again.
It's brettlarkin.com, BrettLarkin.com, brettlarkin.com.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Brett. I appreciate this. It'll be interesting for the listeners to hear, and I imagine that some of them will be in touch with you. I have a lot of people from other countries, so they're less likely to be in touch. But I also have, about 100,000 people a month come to my website. So, but a lot of them are from every country there is. So I think that this is something that's of interest to a lot of people. And
yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/CarlHelvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.